Hello, and this is a BICOM podcast. I'm Richard Payton, the director of BICOM in Israel, and I'm delighted to be joined today with Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus, the international spokesperson for the IDF. Jonathan, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Thank you. My pleasure. Good morning.
If I can ask you, first of all, just to outline the IDF deployment in the age of the corona and dealing with the coronavirus, could you outline the IDF deployment itself? And then, of course, we'd be very keen to hear about the cooperation with the Palestinians, both in the West Bank and also kind of how the IDF relates to corona within the Gaza Strip as well.
Yes, of course. So the IDF really has one big thing on its mind and then another thing on its mind. The big thing is to continue to defend the state of Israel, to be deployed effectively along all our borders, and to defend Israel against any external or internal threat. That mission remains number one in terms of priority. And the second thing that we're doing these days in a way that we've actually seen a growing in that effort, a growth in that effort rather, is assisting national efforts in dealing with the, first of all, trying to limit the spread of the virus and then trying to deal with the consequences of COVID-19. We're doing that in support to the Ministry of Health and under government directives. And we are doing what we're being asked to do, and of course, suggesting other courses of action as well. And so far, the IDF Home Front Command has been the part of the IDF that has been leading those efforts in supporting the Israeli population. We're talking about a rather massive effort, ranging from delivering food, medical supplies, to different parts of Israel where civilians don't have the ability to do so, running rehabilitation hotels where we have thousands of Israeli civilians currently in makeshift hotels that are serving as temporary hospitals for those suffering from mild symptoms of COVID-19, and even supporting the Israeli police in patrolling the streets and enforcing lockdowns or curfews in other parts of Israel. And all the way to providing novel technologies as, for instance, ventilators and other types of technologies through our technological units in the IDF. So it's a whole range of activities that the IDF is part of, based on guidance from the Ministry of Health and in coordination with other government authorities.
Thank you. And could you tell us now about the cooperation with the Palestinian Authority and Palestinian security forces?
Yes, of course. So it's clear both to us in Israel and I think to the Palestinian Authority that we're looking at a common challenge. One would even call it a threat that requires us to coordinate our efforts, to work together, to share knowledge, to share equipment, and to do the best we possibly can in order to limit the spread of the virus for the benefit of both both sides. As such, what we've been doing almost since day one of the outbreak in this region has been to share knowledge. It has been to coordinate efforts. It has been to provide equipment to the Palestinian Authority as personal protection equipment, sanitation, chemicals, cleaning devices, as well as breathing machines and a few other rare necessities related to dealing with the situation. So far, the general line has been that the Palestinian Authority has been and is responsible for everything happening with regards to the Palestinian population. They're the ones who have been defining restrictions on movement, and they're the ones who have been implementing them with the Palestinian population, and we have been working together and supporting those efforts. The lead organization within the Israeli Defense Ministry that is doing that is COGAT, the Coordinator for Government Activities, and they are the ones who are working together with Palestinian Authority officials, medical and governmental, in order to contain the situation. So far, important to emphasize, as of today, The spread of the disease in the Palestinian authorities is under control, and the health system is well within its capabilities in terms of dealing with the situation. However, we are aware of the fact that things can turn quickly, and we're monitoring the situation and operating together in order to avoid any eventualities of overload of the medical systems, of course, first and foremost, not in Israel, and second, not in the Palestinian authorities either.
How concerned are you about a raise in cases and an emergency situation developing in the Gaza Strip?
Well, we are concerned. Again, giving the understanding that COVID-19 does not recognize political borders and does not distinguish between religions or political affiliation. Having that as a premise, then of course we understand, we and I think that the other side understands as well, that we need to be very mindful of the spread and limit it. We're monitoring the situation in Gaza. In this case, of course, there's added complexity. As we all know, it's ruled by a terrorist group, Hamas, which doesn't cooperate with Israel. However, what is going on is that Israel is facilitating international aid to the Gaza Strip. We're talking about similar types of equipment, protective gear, disinfectants, medical gear, and even beds and makeshift hospitals. All of that is coming into the Gaza Strip. Various donor countries and international organizations are providing that, and Israel is letting that through, simply because we understand that we have a security interest in making sure that the situation in Gaza stays stable and that there's not a massive uncontrolled outbreak of COVID-19 there.
The other story that's kind of emanating from Gaza, at least in the Israeli media, are the kind of a suggestion of a renewal of a potential prisoner exchange between Israel and Hamas. I don't know what if you can comment on any of that with regard to kind of how military intelligence perhaps assesses the recent statements by the Hamas leader Sinwar.
Yes, well, as I think you'd be able to appreciate, it's a very sensitive matter dealt with by the highest echelons in Israel, and I don't think that it would be wise at this time to comment on anything of it. Things are happening behind the scenes that I wouldn't be able to elaborate about it further, not in terms of assessing the seriousness of the other side or ramifications on our side. We'll leave that for the future.
Okay. I mean, just a last question on Gaza. Is there any concern that within this medical situation, that Hamas could try and expose that and kind of renew attacks on the border or rocket attacks? Is that a serious concern?
Well, you know, what we've seen over the last few weeks has been both from the Palestinian Authority, or I should correct myself and say in Palestinian media, as well as Gazan media, we've seen an effort, what appears to be an effort, to spread misinformation and fake news, whereby they're trying to pin the spread of COVID-19 on Israel. And many libels about how the virus is spread from Israel on purpose to the Palestinians. I think that's reprehensible, and I think that's very dangerous. But it relates to your question. It's, of course, false. But it relates also to your question with regards to the possible courses of action that Hamas may take here. And, of course, yes, that risk always exists, whereby Hamas, in trying to deal with an internal situation and failing to do so, might try the old and unfortunately proven trick in the book to try to blame Israel for it, and they'll do so by starting violence. That would, of course, be very regrettable, and that's something that we understand exists and something that we urge Hamas not to to try to do. It would be a very unwise decision and unfortunate for everybody involved.
Indeed. If we can just look towards Israel's northern border and Syria specifically. Last week, your office put out some interesting footage showing a meeting between senior Syrian army officials and Hezbollah. What do you kind of, again, within the background of COVID-19 existing, how do you assess the Iranian agenda to kind of to continue entrenchment in southern Syria?
So with regards to that, we're seeing a continued Iranian effort to entrench themselves militarily in Syria. And we see that they, despite the fact that they're reeling from spread of the virus in Iran, and many of their proxy organizations are surely feeling the results of it as well. Despite that, we see that they continue their efforts to destabilize the region. They continue to export violence, and specifically to, with regards to Syria, continue to try to establish with Hezbollah and the Syrian armed forces, the Syrian military, a presence, a military permanent presence on our very borders in the northern part of the Golan Heights. We see that as unacceptable, and we've been very clear and very consistent in our strategy in saying that this is something that will not be tolerated by Israel. That's also the reason why we chose to issue this kind of very blunt, I'd say, but public warning to that certain general, the certain Syrian general who was out patrolling or monitoring with the Iranian and the Hezbollah forces. This is a development that we are monitoring closely with our intelligence and have no intention of allowing to become a reality on our border.
There was a comment from an Israeli journalist after you released that footage that suggested that in previous times, instead of releasing the footage, there may have been a strike. Do you think there's a change in Israeli approach to these things, or has there been a continued consistent approach to dealing with this?
Oh, I think that there's ample examples of both. And as the saying goes, there's more than one way to skin a cat. In this aspect, what we're looking at is simply a clear warning. And I think anybody around us, the Iranians, the Syrians, Hezbollah, I think they have a good assessment of the fact that whenever we make something public, that indicates a very serious intention. And the wise thing to do on the Iranian part would, of course, be to heed those warnings on the Syrian part, to heed those warnings, to stop trying to establish an offensive military infrastructure on the Syrian border close to Israel. We know what they're trying to do. We know what the purpose of their efforts are. And that's why we're indicating clearly, most of it using non-kinetics, that this is something that we won't allow happening.
As well as the build-up of military infrastructure there, are you also seeing continued efforts to bring import from Iran and elsewhere kind of game-changing weapons as well?
Indeed, the let's say the strategic effort that Hezbollah is the main recipient of, I'm talking about precision-guided missiles. We see that effort ongoing. By Iran, by the Revolutionary Guards Quds Force, despite everything happening from the beginning of the year and until now, we see that they have not relinquished those aspirations, and they continue in trying to deliver weapon systems, specifically PGM components. And by the way, they continue in trying to manufacture them on Lebanese soil as well. These are all things that despite the situation or the world news being very much focused on COVID-19 and related events, that continues unabated, and that's also something that we're monitoring and have again been very clear about the fact that this is a strategic threat that we have no intention of allowing to materialize against us, whether it's in Syria, in Lebanon, or elsewhere.
Very interesting. You say that kind of that process is continuing in Lebanon. How much do you feel that there is bandwidth within the international community to hear Israel's concerns at a time like this? Or is it kind of just so one-tracked on COVID-19?
Well, frankly, I think that the bandwidth to heed our warnings and listen to our, I think, very, very legitimate concerns with regards to terrorist Hezbollah, I think that bandwidth has been too limited to begin with. And we've been talking about sharing intelligence and showing evidence about what Hezbollah are doing and why that is a threat to our safety and, as such, regional stability. We've been sharing this intelligence for years now, frankly. And I don't think that enough important European countries are taking notice and, more importantly, doing anything about it. Hezbollah continues to hide its weapons behind Lebanese civilians. They have 130,000 rockets hidden behind Lebanese homes, schools, near hospitals, and even mosques. And they continue to try to build PGMs in Lebanon. We've been very open about it, yet we don't see, except from American sanctions, we don't see other countries really taking notice of it. We don't see UN resolutions about it. We don't see an implementation of 1701 on the ground, which could have a great mitigating effect. None of that's happening. And where that leads, possibly, is that the only way to deal or to mitigate such a situation will be kinetics. Now, it's clear that Israel does not seek to escalate the situation, and we, of course, wouldn't use kinetics as our first tool or the first choice. But since what Hezbollah is doing here, continuing to develop a strategic threat against Israel, since they continue to do that, then that is definitely on the table. It's important to emphasize, I mean, international bandwidth and COVID-19 and many other events that are ongoing in the world may steal attention, but I can assure you that in terms of our intelligence and our focus, we continue to follow and monitor what the Iranians are doing in Syria and elsewhere, and what Hezbollah is trying to achieve inside Lebanon.
Thank you. And I mean, and similarly, the Iranian nuclear project, do you think there's a chance that that is kind of also using COVID-19 as a cover to continue to enrich uranium and to develop that capacity?
Yes, I wouldn't want to go into the final details of that at this stage. But Iranians being Iranians, based on past experience and the level of commitment that we've seen from this regime in trying to develop weapons, I wouldn't think that beyond them, but I wouldn't go into more specific details about that just yet.
Okay, one final question. Speaking to Amos Yadlin, the former head of military intelligence, a week or so ago, he described the COVID-19 as a black swan event. How much do you think this kind of event will affect future IDF planning?
It's definitely a first, that's clear, and it's definitely a different situation. The IDF Home Front Command has contingencies for various events, earthquakes, biological disasters, biological warfare, and other types of events. And we had limited preparations for a pandemic like this. But yes, on the positive side, the situation and what I would characterize as a rather fast and agile response by Israel in general, but specifically by the IDF and the IDF Home Front Command, has generated quite a lot of new knowledge. And I think that the example of, for instance, opening hotels or refitting hotels to hospitals is a good way of assisting national infrastructure, flattening the curve, and focusing efforts on where they're needed the most dearly. That's just one example. And I think that definitely the experience here over the last month or so is it's positive in that sense that we're establishing new knowledge and new practices that hopefully we won't need to use again. But if we'll need to use them, then now we have another set of tools in our toolbox in terms of dealing with the situation. And I will say on a civilian level, on a national level, I think that the IDF has been interacting with additional parts of Israeli society that don't naturally come into contact with the IDF on a daily basis. And I'm talking about the ultra-Orthodox and many parts of the Muslims and Arabs in Israel, where we're seeing today and for the last week's pictures, and I've personally been on the ground and seen it for myself, extensive efforts of the IDF to distribute food and medicine in Bnei Brak, an ultra-Orthodox city close to Tel Aviv, and also now in the northern parts of Israel to different Arab, Muslim, and Christian villages. And that's a positive. And hopefully that we could be able to use that as a foundation for improving understanding and for creating a better situation for the day after we exit the COVID-19 situation. And hopefully that can have some positive effects on Israeli society long term as well.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for ending on a positive note, and thank you very much for sharing your assessment with us this morning. Most appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Richard. Thank you.